Could you imagine taking a class in uncreative writing? A class in which you're penalized for showing any originality and creativity. Instead, you're rewarded for plagiarism, plundering, and stealing. Well, if this sounds appealing to you, then Kenneth Goldsmith is your man. He teaches an uncreative writing course at the University of Pennsylvania. Goldsmith is also a poet, writer, and author of the book Uncreative Writing, Managing Language in the Digital Age. He tells Steve Paulson that literature is in a rut and has a ways to go to catch up with other art forms.
Much of the most popular music is made entirely from cutting and pasting. Nobody would dare play drums on a track today. You sample drums. This is happening in art. 100 years ago, Marcel Duchamp took a urinal and recontextualized it, didn't do a thing to it, just put it into a different context. And that's already 100 years old, and that's old hat. Somehow, writing has never engaged with these ideas that are rampant all over the rest of culture.
So you're saying the digital media has challenged writers to do something different, maybe to be more experimental, and in the process to give up some of our old ideas about what creative writing is all about, what originality is all about.
Well, I actually don't think that this is really that unoriginal. As a matter of fact, you can cut and paste in very original and very unique and very expressive ways. You can create an entire novel that you haven't written that nobody else could write by the way that you've cut, pasted, and sewn it together. I mean, this, again, of course, goes right back to hip-hop tracks and things that nobody even would think twice about in other parts of culture.
Well, I have to ask you about an event that you were part of, actually at the White House, so President and Mrs. Obama's Celebration of American Poetry. And I know you read some of your work there, including a piece called Traffic. Can you tell me about this work, Traffic?
Well, I mean, it's a transcription on New York Radio. We have wonderful traffic here in New York. New York News Radio, a wonderful station that's very old called 1010 Winds, is round-the-clock news. Every 10 minutes, they give the traffic report. So this was a book that was 24 hours worth of traffic reports every 10 minutes on the ones, as they say.
Could you give us a sample of this?
Are you ready?
Sure.
Okay. 4:31. Remember how bad it was yesterday? It's starting again. The east side delays begin at the Tarry Borough. It's pretty much one long line now all the way to the Battery. The west side delays to the Battery begin back at the Boat Basin at 79th Street. We've got a ton of interior traffic in Midtown. 7th Avenue, Times Square, that's the delay. That's where it all gets going. It comes out of Central Park. Broadway and 8th Avenue is going to be impacted by that as well. On the east side streets are packed through the 40s and 50s, and that's why 1st, 2nd, 3rd, Park Avenue right now, an absolute mess. So trying to get around Manhattan just like yesterday is not going to be easy at all. Across the East River, already a ton of traffic each way on the Brooklyn Bridge. Now the Manhattan Bridge is bumper to bumper coming into Manhattan. Jam-packed on the upper roadway to Brooklyn. The lower roadway is also a mess. 59th Street Bridge is getting real bad. The belt is jammed east off the Verrazano. Some types of problems on the way west toward Coney Island. And right now, heavy transit delays. Be sure to budget extra travel time taking the LIRR out of Penn Station. There you have it.
So that's what you read to President Obama.
I read traffic reports to the President of the United States.
And how did that go over at the White House?
They loved it. They absolutely loved it. It was very funny because I chose to put together a little set about an American icon, the Brooklyn Bridge. And so I read 3 short pieces, an excerpt from Walt Whitman's Crossing Brooklyn Ferry, written in 1840 before there was a bridge there. And then I went through Hart Crane's poem about the Brooklyn Bridge, which is a kind of a disjunctive modernist thing. And then finally ended up with Traffic, what I just read for you. Now, the audience, who was really senators and mayors and, you know, Democratic Party donors, sat there very politely and quietly through the Whitman and the Crane, the real poetry. But when they heard the traffic reports...
They were laughing, I bet.
They were howling. There's a shot of Obama leaning back in his chair with a giant smile across his face, listening to the traffic report. Maybe it's vernacular. I mean, maybe this is just language that people can understand, right? I mean, who understands Hart Crane? Who cares about Hart Crane? Nobody. Nobody cares about real poetry. What people care about is kind of the language that's around them. And of course, these are Washington bureaucrats, so they had ideas about gridlock and congestion and delay. You know, there really is narrative in there as well, in a way that Whitman gives you impression or Crane gives you disjunction. I'm actually giving you narrative, but I didn't write any of these. So this is the weird thing. The most avant-garde, the most unoriginal, the most uncreative work was the work that went over the very best in the White House.
Hmm. Now, you are not only a writer, you're also a professor at the University of Pennsylvania, and you teach a class called Uncreative Writing. Can you tell me about this class?
Sure. In this class, students are penalized for any shred of originality or creativity that they show. They must be uncreative for an entire semester.
Meaning what they write can only be taken from other sources, copied?
Absolutely. Absolutely. They can only appropriate, transcribe, copy, you know, the kind of stuff that I do.
And why is this the requirement of the class?
Well, the idea is to move away from what you know. As a college professor, I can get them better at writing, but quite frankly, at the University of Pennsylvania, they all know how to write pretty well, particularly, you know, at upper levels. So what are we going to do? We're going to keep honing that short story so you can, you know, market it. That's fine. It's somebody else's job. My job is really to challenge them and to get them to think differently about what writing is and what the creative process is. We do exercises, and one of the best exercises we do is I just tell them simply, with no further instruction, I say, retype 5 pages. And they shrug their shoulders and they leave the class. But the next week they come in with the assignment, 5 pages, and that's where it gets very interesting. What did you choose to type? How did you choose to type it? Why did you choose to type it? And suddenly all these autobiographical ideas and ideas of choices and tastes all come into the seemingly innocuous idea of retyping 5 pages. And suddenly they go, aha, I wasn't thinking about that, but of course I was making choices, and making choices is an uncreative slash creative act.
But you're also, it sounds like, asking your students to plagiarize what someone else has already written, right?
Absolutely.
Which is the kind of thing that usually gets students kicked out of school.
Well, you know, I encourage plagiarism. You must plagiarize in my class. You know, these kids are so good at plagiarism, but they always have to do it surreptitiously. And, you know, in my class, I say, you may not do it surreptitiously. You've got to put it all out on the table. Now tell me why you did it. Let's get responsible about your plagiarism. What choices did you make? When kids plagiarize, they're not really thinking about the sort of formal choices that they're making. So it becomes an enlightening thing. Now, of course, academically, this is really the worst thing you can do. As a matter of fact, at the end of each class, I make them buy a term paper from a paper mill and put their name to it and turn it in as their final project. But then they've got to get up and they've got to defend it as if it's theirs.
But you're supporting a corrupt industry of, you know, the people who write those term papers for someone else and for someone else's name.
Absolutely. We are. And the best time is when we can get university funds to actually purchase these papers.
I can't imagine how this goes over with other professors, with other writers. Some people must be furious at you.
No, nobody's furious. You know, listen, no animals were harmed during the making of this movie. This is safe. This is consensual. It's like an S&M club. You know, you go in and you role play and everybody's cool with it. You know, and those are the rules. This is the thing about a classroom. I mean, it's controlled and it's safe. And really, nobody's really getting hurt here.
So what do you think students learn by taking your uncreative writing class?
Well, I mean, they learn to make decisions and they learn to become accountable. I mean, everything must be articulated. It's more like what I would assume law school is like. You have to learn to take somebody else's point of view, even if you don't believe it. I mean, this is happening sort of in the legal profession all the time. So you're getting outside of yourself. You're adopting things that aren't yours. You're judging language in a very different way than you've ever seen it. And the best thing that can come out of this, I think, is one of the great things is that they reject this way of working. I say, look, suspend your disbelief for a semester. And then, if you don't like this way of working, you can actually say, again, it's defensible, I've tried it and I don't like it. This is crap. But often what happens is this becomes another tool in a writer's toolbox. And I think this is actually a very contemporary tool for writers to be using.
It sounds like you're saying that even though you call your class uncreative writing, this is an exercise in creativity.
creativity is sort of so formulaic and so sort of bankrupt at this point that it's really, I think, the thing to flee from.
Why is it bankrupt, though?
Creativity is not creative. You know, it's the 100,000th coming-of-age novel. Actually, I want to talk about the shortlist for the 2011 Man Booker Prize.
Okay.
Four of the six shortlisted novels advertise themselves as featuring immigrants negotiating the difficulties of a strange land. Five of the six hinge on the dramatic turn of a murder. Four of the six reveal secrets from the past that come unexpectedly to light. I mean, this is from the website of the Man Booker, okay? Half of those through the surprise arrival of a letter. Four of the six reveal the unreliability of narration and so on. They're all kind of formulaic. And this is what's passing, really, for the what we're calling the best literature. That's not creative to me.
You're saying there's nothing new to be said anymore. It's all just rehashing what someone else has already written.
Well, you know, I think there are new things to be said. Who hasn't been moved by a beautiful memoir or by a beautiful novel? I don't want to be so prescriptive in that way. But again, I feel that we've limited ourselves to these sort of same variations on narratives, and it's kind of time to open up the field a little bit more to other ways of being, those ways perhaps being uncreative or unoriginal.
But I think the response that you get from a lot of novelists is it's not just the themes that matter, it's the way you put together the sentences. It's the use of language to create imaginative spaces. Are you saying that's not important, or we've just misrepresented that?
No, I'm saying that is important, but I'd actually say that the way that those texts are constructed are fairly conventional and fairly similar. Again, there's a whole century of experimentation with language, which is completely ignored. There's many, many ways to construct novels. We actually just tend to construct novels quite similarly. Just a call to open things up. Let's get a little more contemporary.
Kenneth Goldsmith is the author of Uncreative Writing, Managing Language in the Digital Age. He spoke with Steve Paulson.